Hello and welcome to Hawkeye Nation. This is HawkCast, your Iowa football, basketball, and recruiting podcast brought to you by Go Iowa Awesome and Rivals.com. I'm your recruiting analyst and host, Elliot Clough, at Elliot Clough on Twitter, joined by our publisher, Adam Jacoby, and managing editor, Ross Binder, here on this Saturday evening post-spring game, spring open practice, I should say. Before we get started, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, drop a like, drop a comment. Let us know what you're thinking, your thoughts on the open spring practice, who popped, who maybe disappointed you. Either way, we're here to hear it. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, listen, please subscribe, leave that rate and review. We appreciate it. Before we dive too much into the game, I want to hit on one thing quick. Iowa landed transfer from North Dakota, Cade Baroud, today. He had actually made the trip to Iowa City for the game and was there and was in shorts, which, per him, terrible idea. He told me that this afternoon. I spoke with him twice, excuse me, once following the game today. Talked about his commitment, his decision to end up at Iowa, and of course we have a free article there talking about who he is, what he'll do at Iowa. You can check both of those out at iowa.rivals.com. If you're not a premium subscriber yet, you can do that today, iowa.rivals.com/subscribe. Get that premium article and hear him talk specifically about his decision. Before we dive too much into the spring game, guys, just initial thoughts on seeing Iowa land Baroud. Ross, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a nice job of covering it in the article on our site, which is that he's a good depth piece. You know, he played center at North Dakota. That's actually a position where Iowa has pretty good depth if, you know, Logan Jones gets healthy, and they've got Ellsbury there as well. But, you know, he can also help at the other positions on the interior, you know, the guard positions. Iowa's offensive line is not such a deep and impressive unit that there is not room for some newcomers to come in and earn playing time. So I think he's definitely capable of doing that. And it's good to see them being proactive and trying to, you know, address that depth issue in the offensive line, I think. So, yeah, it seems like a good, a real solid pickup for Iowa.
Yeah, to me, this seems like a transfer portal success story, because he's a guy that had gotten some attention from Iowa, came out of Southeast Polk, but even by his own admission, you know, was not really ready for prime time FBS Power Five ball. And so instead of being a walk-on somewhere, you know, he has this opportunity to go to UND, really sort out his career, his priorities. And, you know, that and the fact that the UND coaches were there to sort of help his progression along, get him, like, obviously it's never a football coach's job to get a player ready for some other team, right? The football coach's job is to win games. But the fact that he was able to grow into the prospect that he really ought to have been, and is now able to go to Iowa where he, you know, wanted to go, and now has proven himself to be ready and, you know, to have earned that scholarship in a way that he was not really earning it coming out of high school. I mean, that is what you want the transfer portal to be. So great for him. Great for Iowa, obviously. Ross, like you said, he's a depth piece, and Iowa really kind of needs that, especially looking at the second unit that they were trotting out today, and we can talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, this looks like an unqualified win to me, just full stop. Elliot, how about you?
So, you know, I think when we're talking about adding transfers to this roster, and we're talking about offensive line, I feel like most people would have wanted a tackle. And that includes myself. I mean, when I put together the poll on Twitter and on our premium board, I included left tackle because that's probably, I mean, they just lost Caden Proctor, even though he was on the team for about 5 minutes, and Mason Richmond has struggled at left tackle. We'll put it that way. So I would have considered that probably more of a win here, but adding a player like Baroud is definitely not a negative. I mean, he might well surpass guys like Connor Colby, guys like Bo Stevens at that guard spot before the season starts. Obviously, they've got a spring. They've got a few months ahead of him being at Iowa and being in Tim Lester's system. But he is a guy that if he doesn't start this year, he could definitely start next year. He could start the year after that. He's a guy that right now you feel a lot more comfortable with your offensive line depth with him on the roster. And I think now is the perfect time for him to come in. He's got 3 years of eligibility. So at the very least, you're probably going to get 2 solid years out of him. He's a guy that learned how to take care of his body, learned what it means to be a college football player. And now you're getting not necessarily a ready-made guy, but a guy who you can mold into a player that you want. He's a guy that wanted to be a Hawkeye, and to add him to the roster is definitely a net positive. Does it fix the offensive line? Does it make him the best offensive line in the country? No, but it is a solid addition. It's probably, I wouldn't say the equivalent of adding Rusty Feth, because Rusty was kind of a plug and play guy at that left guard spot, more or less. Of course, it took him to get a little while to get in there after Nick DeYoung, but he's a Rusty Feth that you've got 3 years of instead of a single year. So that's ultimately the net positive that you see in adding a guy like Berood. But also the game today, the open practice, that's something we should definitely get to transition here. You know, there are a lot of things that were good. There were a lot of things that were bad today. And let's start off with the one thing that I think was glaring, because I think the sentiment that you shouldn't, you know, make conclusions based on spring ball is pertinent. I think it's the way you should approach talking about spring ball, because you got 4 months, 5 months until we're actually playing football that matters. And that's generally how I feel. However, I think the one glaring thing you have to take away if you're a member of this coaching staff or a member of the recruiting staff is you need to go get a quarterback in the portal, and you need to do it as soon as possible. You tried with Ty Thompson. He committed to Tulane. Fine. But back on the horse, you got to go get somebody, and you got to get somebody that can compete. Because after Cade McNamara, it is a steep drop-off. I don't think either Deacon or Marco are ready to go right now. And Cade's injury history, obviously, you never hope talk of a quarterback or a player in general continuing to get hurt, but he has an injury history. So you have to be aware of it at the very least. And so they need a portal quarterback, and they need one bad.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Having watched how that spring game unfolded, you saw a little bit of potential out of Marco Linez, especially in the back half. He looked rough in 7-on-7s, and there's no other way to put it, because some of those throws were not competitive at a Big Ten level. Once they got to 11-on-11, and he was more able to use some of his footwork in the pocket, really generate his own space and sometimes extend plays, you saw him get a little bit better. When he's on rollouts and his feet are moving, he can throw from the run or from a boot. He can be effective at times, but he is not, I wouldn't say that he looks Big Ten ready right now. And, you know, part of it is, yes, brand new coordinator, brand new offense, and it's the middle of April. He doesn't have to be ready now, but he's not ready now. And right now, as it stands on April 20th, there aren't any healthy Big Ten quarterbacks on Iowa's roster, Big Ten level quarterbacks. And Cade McNamara is, you know, at the very least on his way. He's projected to be healthy. But we were saying this 12 months ago, too. And obviously things didn't go great. And some of that's just rotten luck. And you hope that his luck improves. But you want a little bit more stability at quarterback than you hope QB1's luck improves. So, yeah, there were some things to be optimistic about from the two quarterbacks who got the lion's share of the reps today, but it is pretty telling that Hill and Lynes got the lion's share of the reps today, and not, you know, dipping into the Tommy Pulski and the rest of the depth chart. By I mean, Pulski got on there at the end of practice, but usually in these open practices, the back half is all third stringers and walk-ons because they're the ones that need the reps. Here, right now, Iowa's two top quarterbacks need the reps. So that jumped out at me. Ross, you had something to say?
Now, I didn't get to see the practice like you guys did, but I saw some of the comments afterward, and one of the things that jumped out to me was Jay Higgins noting that this was not the full offense that they saw during practice the rest of the spring. It was a more pared down version, more vanilla, it sounded like. So to me, I mean, what do you make of the fact that that's the sort of offense they're running today? And according to what you guys both saw, neither Hill nor Marco were really effective in running that even pared down version of the offense, like that after, 3 weeks or a month of practice, essentially. That seems like not the best sign, but I don't know. What did you think?
So my initial thoughts, and the way you could spin that in a positive way, is that probably means more involvement from playmakers, right? In terms of it being pared down. When you don't pare it down, that involves the playmakers more in more creative ways. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is what you mentioned, Rose. Like, if they can't run it now, when are they going to run it? And I tend to lean default optimist, but when we're seeing these two quarterbacks miss throws on air and throwing them at the feet or under throwing them, I don't know how many passes they each completed, but like the only quarterback on this roster that looks like a Big Ten quarterback to me is Cade McNamara. That's what I'll say. I was talking to one of the other media members. It's just like you watch and it's like, what? Like there's such a drastic difference between these three quarterbacks. Cade and these two quarterbacks. And like we saw Cade at the beginning of last season, though he was hurt and he struggled. He wasn't great. So, and like we're talking about the portal, sorry to deviate the conversation here and feel free to bounce back to what I was talking about. But
I
when we
do that
talked
20
about,
times a podcast. I have to apologize.
when we're talking about the portal and quarterbacks, don't be afraid to get a guy that could compete with Cade McNamara this fall. I don't care how much you paid him, I don't care about how he feels about it. This is a Division I football team, Power Four football team, Big Ten football team. You bring in guys that are going to make you better, that can win you football games. If you can get a quarterback that could ultimately be better for you in that regard than Cade McNamara, then you get him. Is it likely that Iowa could land a quarterback like that? I don't know. You have to think that these guys who are in the portal aren't going to look at Iowa and see it as their best opportunity. Why did Ty Thompson commit to Tulane with a brand new staff, right? Instead of going to Iowa. You can't blame him.
There was one quote that Logan Jones, who was really nice enough to give us some time after the practice for interviews, even though he was hurt and didn't suit up or anything like that, but he was still out there to talk to us. And he was talking about the job that Tyler Ellsbury did at center. This is related to the conversation, but let me find that one real quick. So he says, every time that Ellsbury goes out there, you never notice a change. And I think that's pretty cool. And that's how it should be. A one to a two, those two should be able to go in there and you shouldn't be able to notice a change. And so what he was talking about is when Ellsbury goes in, that the level of play doesn't drop off from one guy to the next. And so right now, if McNamara is not in there, there is absolutely a change. There's absolutely a drop off. And so if Iowa brings in that second guy who can compete, who can be that quality backup that, or even, like you said, pushed McNamara for that starting job. One, if McNamara is that team leader, is that like our goal is to win games kind of guy, and he's gotten a little bit of experience with that over the last year or two, just having to be on the sidelines. But if that is still his goal, then he welcomes that. And if he wants to play quarterback at the next level, and if you know, transfer portal QBX wants to play at the next level too, at the next level, there are great NFL caliber quarterbacks all over the league, like on your roster too. So you can only run from the competition for so long. And if you have these great, if you want to do this, if you want to be the pro, you're going to be competing for your job for pretty much the entire rest of your career. So it does not have to be something that Iowa coaches need to be afraid of or to, you know, this is not a kid glove situation. This is Iowa has an opportunity to really charge up its offense, take care of its biggest glaring weakness. And at some point, that has to supersede any idea of, well, but Cade is making X amount of money, or Cade is our guy, or like we put him on top of the depth chart when he was hurt for a reason. Okay, but you know, confidence only gets you so far when it gets to September and there's nobody who's healthy and who can throw a pass against a Big Ten defense or an Iowa State defense or, you know, name a power school defense. You got to do something about it.
Ross, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this.
I mean, I agree with you guys. I think it's clear that Iowa needs help at the quarterback position in a bad way. You know, that has been obvious for a long time. You know, I mean, it was obvious all last regular season after Cade went down and we watched Deacon for 10, 11 weeks, whatever it ended up being. We saw him struggle, and he struggled a lot. We saw Marco briefly in the bowl game, and he could run the ball really well. That was strong, but that was, you know, the extent of his strengths at that point. And obviously, you know, you guys have seen a little bit more of the practice stuff than I have, but from what you've reported and what some other people have reported, doesn't sound like either guy has made huge strides, obviously, from last year. Learning a new system, I'm sure didn't help, but still, you know, it is what it is. And the struggles at that position and, you know, just hoping that you're going to get, 12 healthy games out of Cade, you know, it's a cliche, but hope is not a strategy. And if they're going to go into this season with Cade and, you know, only Deacon and Marco as the backups, they're putting a lot of eggs in the Cade basket. And I would be very, very nervous about the offense's capability this fall. So yeah, I think looking into the portal is definitely a good idea. It's something they should have been doing hard from January. I mean, like you mentioned with Ty Thompson, like they've poked around, but I think it's been a priority for a while, and it sounds like spring practice is only, you know, accelerated that priority, if anything. So get out there, beat the bushes, look under every rock you can. They need a quarterback.
With that said, you got to think that Tim Lester knows a quarterback out there that's played in an RPO heavy scheme that can come in and instantly make that room better, right? Like, he probably offered guys at Western Michigan that are actively like a hell of a lot better than the quarterbacks on Iowa's roster right now, right? Like, he's got connections in college football. He knows guys in the Illinois area, in the Michigan area. He knows coaches, like high school coaches, even other coordinators, right? Like, he can call a coach and be like, hey, saw your guy entered the portal, you know, or like, do you know anybody? Like, if Lester isn't doing, Lester should be doing. We'll put it that way. And I think, like, what did we both say on Thursday, Adam? It's that Tim Lester is a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And I'm fully behind that statement. I believe in that statement. And he doesn't seem like a guy who would sit on his hands in this regard. I do feel like he'd be a guy that would. I know Kirk is the head coach. This is what we need, and I know it. I can go get it. Like he's a. What are you gonna do about it, guy? When you have a problem, that's something my mom always asked me when I had a problem as a kid. Okay, I hear you. What are you gonna do about it? And I'm very thankful for that, and I will be thankful for that if Tim Lester is able to go get a competent quarterback for Iowa that we can watch this fall and not cry.
You mentioned something that I think is the big key here, and it's not just the high school coaches he knows or the kids that he recruited who may be at a Power Five school or at a MAC school. I think it is the connections that he's made to other college coaches over the years, and all you have to do is talk to him for a couple minutes, and you really understand what a great job he does of connecting with people on a on a cordial and professional level, but he's very much a talker and a listener as much as a teacher. And so it seems prohibitively obvious that if there is an RPO ready QB out there, especially around the Midwest, that Lester would not have to make many calls to get in contact with that kid. So I think it will be fascinating to watch how Iowa approaches the rest of the offseason going into summer practice sessions and to see whether they address this directly or not. Because yeah, we've said it again, or we've said it already, I'll say it again. Hill and Lynes, as they look today, did not look close to being able to compete regularly on the Big Ten level. And I know that's weird to say that about, Deacon Hill, whose record as a starter is what, 5-3, 6-3 against like Power Five competition. But I mean, all you had to do is watch that games or, watch those games. And his shortcomings were obvious. And I, it would have been unfair to expect him to look like Peyton Manning after 15 practices with a brand new offense and a brand new coordinator. But you did want to see more improvement than what he showed today. And it really sort of solidified the notion that this is probably going to be a problem with some outside help as the answer, as opposed to development.
Yeah, because development, they're going to need a lot of it, and they aren't going to be getting it anytime soon with the guys on the roster. James Reaser, for as much as I like him, he's not going to be able to come in and start day one out of Florida, the 2024 signee. Now, speaking of the offense, speaking of places that they've struggled, the wide receiving core is very, very, very thin. I look at the roster right now. The three guys that are receivers and one's like a flex, the flex who plays a combination of running back and receiver, and one of them's a walk-on. The three that I think give any sort of juice or energy to this offense that I can that you can trust to make a play: Caden Wiegen, Caleb Brown, and T.J. Washington. To me, at this very moment, as far as receivers go, that's it. Of course, you can trust Luke Lachey in the passing game. Of course, Hassan Ahsenga, assuming he's healthy sooner rather than later. I think he had a wrap around his hand. I don't know if he was if it was broken or what was going on there, but assuming he's back and healthy for fall, that'll be beneficial. But Caleb Brown's a playmaker, Caden Wiegen is fast as all hell, and TJ Washington's a playmaker. Those three guys are the ones you can trust in the receiving core right now. I don't think Dayton Howard or Jarrett Bowie caught passes today. And Alex Mota's hurt. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, if Dayton and Bowie caught passes during the 11-on-11 period today, because I didn't see it, if that's the case. But KJ Parker, Reese Van Der See, again, they're coming in as freshmen. I don't expect them to contribute right away either. I don't know how they're going to make it work, but that's another position you probably should go portaling for. Like, they're at 90 scholarships now with Baroud. Now on the scholarship chart. I don't know what they're going to do. Adam, you had a couple things there.
Yeah, there's just one. Let's also throw Seth Anderson into the mix. He's been hurt for most of the spring.
Yeah, my
But
bad.
and Kirk did mention that he was out. One second here. Cough button. We'll fix it in post. Said it's a soft tissue thing, and he should be fine in June. And said that in the limited amount of practice that Anderson did get to make in the spring, that he looked good. So there is still some optimism on the staff's front for Flipper Jr. Although I think Seth hates that name, so that's the last time I'm going to say that. So there is that one other guy, but we also saw him last year, and he had a long way to go in terms of being consistently productive. You know, he obviously had that big splash. That's another Dolphin reference. Another big splash TD to open up the season, but he had some of the most unreliable hands on the team last year, and there were not a whole lot of reliable pairs of hands in that wide receiver core. So until we get to see, you know, the world at large gets to see that improvement on the field. And we obviously didn't get to see it during the spring, but until we get to see that in the summer, into the fall, you know, he's still as much a question mark as guys like Bowie or Howard or any of the other young guys. So, you know, he is in that mix, but he has as much to prove as pretty much anybody in that core. Did we miss anybody else, Ross?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a short list, unfortunately. I was going to bring up Anderson, and you mentioned him. I mean, he did play last year, and you mentioned the drops as an issue. His snap count also dropped precipitously over the back half of the season. So, like, he wasn't getting on the field, and I mean, the receiving situation last year was not great either. So, you know, that's concerning. Like you mentioned, you know, Kirk said he had a good spring before he got a little banged up, so that's a good sign. You know, hopefully that carries over into summer and fall. We didn't get you guys didn't get to see it. You didn't get to see it, obviously, but yeah, they need bodies to step up. And I think Elliot's right. It's another position where they could use some portal help. Although, how they're going to make that math work is going to take some doing, because you know they are five over right now after adding a Borud today. So, you know, if you want to add a quarterback and add a receiver and get down to 85, that's seven scholarships that got to get freed up. So that's a not insignificant number.
And maybe a left tackle
On top
And
of all
yeah,
that too.
if you got a left tackle on your shopping list too, then now you're up to eight scholarships that need to get freed up. So that's not easy.
And like the one thing I've said repeatedly throughout this whole thing when talking about Iowa's scholarship situation, which I just updated the scholarship chart with Baroud to it. One thing I've said repeatedly is around the country this time of year after a season, it's pretty common for staffs to say, we can't, this guy's got to go, this guy's got to go, this guy's got to go, this guy's got to go. Whether it's like portal or the injury, the medical thing, more often than not, it's like, look, man, the writing's on the wall. You're not going to play. Sorry. Scoot on out of here. We're a family. We're a family if you produce, right? We're a family if you're good. Kirk doesn't operate like that. I don't know how they're going to figure this out unless NIL comes into play. Which of course we've got something cooking on that regarding an article here sooner rather than later. But this is a tough spot for this team to be in. It's almost like you can have your morals or you can figure out your scholarship situation, right? Like it's a tough spot for Kirk and for Tyler Barnes to be in, and Tim Lester for that matter. He needs a lot of help. He needs a lot of help right now.
Yeah, he
I really
does.
think
And go
I was
ahead.
just going to say the COVID years really brought this to a head, because you know it's great that Iowa gets another year out of Jay Higgins and Nick Jackson, and Quinn Schulte and a couple other guys on defense, but that's another, you know, three, four, five scholarships that are getting used that would be available for you know other players. And So that scholarship math is definitely getting challenged by the COVID stuff. But yeah, it is definitely a big issue that they got to figure out. Sorry, Adam, you were going to say something.
No, I was just trying to fill some silence. We're good.
Cool. All right. Anything else to talk about on the offense? I mean, like the Kamari Moulton looked good in some snaps. TJ Washington, again, the flexibility between wide receiver and running back. I think he's a playmaker. Jazz Patterson needs some help too with the passing offense because downhill runner, man, it's great when you have some space to work with, but when they're crowding the box and they know where the ball's going, that's tough. You can't get ahead of steam. And he needs as much help as the rest of the crew on offense. And I'd probably say the same thing about Caleb Johnson, though Caleb Johnson didn't make a few plays today. Go ahead, Ross.
I was going to say there's no LaShawn today, right? He was out.
Yep, dinged up.
Yep,
Yeah,
had a boot on.
at the very least, he also came out to do interviews with all of us. Not a whole lot of long-term concern there, but yeah, he was out. Caleb Johnson looked good in space and looked like he could be a bit of a weapon in terms of the passing game. Jazz Patterson, yeah, I think he will be helped by this new offense just because he won't be running into nine-man fronts with the linebackers crashing the line of scrimmage on every single play like they were last year. But he is also a guy who could really stand to be as productive in space as we saw Moulton, Washington, and yeah, like you said, Caleb Johnson today. Because at some point, you know, these guys' roles are changing in the new offense as much as, I mean, pretty much anybody's. Like, I think the biggest difference, aside from like just the motion, but the biggest difference in terms of roles is the way the backfield is used. And a perfect example is Hayden Large. You know, Iowa didn't do a ton with fullbacks today, and Hayden spent a pretty decent amount of time like on the line, and you know, it's not quite his strong suit. So, you know, how these guys adjust to like how do the running backs adjust to being, you know, to playing more in space, to being more of receiving threats? How does Iowa adjust its offense without having that fullback in there as often? And we saw a little bit of that last year, but it's really going to kick up this year. You know, these guys will have to adjust the way that they play as much as anything. And so, as long as it's catered to their strengths, great. But this is a little bit reminiscent of when Greg Davis came in and Iowa's receivers, which were still more like Ken O'Keefe receivers, it basically turned into an exodus in that depth chart too, because those guys were not built for that quick Greg Davis passing offense. And it turns out that offense wasn't that good either. But that had a sort of a long-term effect. So you hope you don't see that with the backfield. And you probably won't see as much of it happen with this go around. But yes, there will be a little bit of transition, and there will be guys who thought they were in position to succeed with their skill sets, and they might start to see that sort of slipping away as Iowa's offense changes. Ross, you had something?
I did. You mentioned the motion. Can you guys talk a little bit about that, what you saw from the motion today? Like, how much did they use? What did it look like? Because that's obviously been a major theme this whole spring in terms of the Tim Lester offense and everything. So just say a little
Yeah,
bit about that, I guess.
they showed a few things, although Jay Higgins made sure to mention after the game that it was a pared down version of it because they didn't want to put a whole lot on film. And to some level, I get that. You know, there were obviously people on social media who were like, it's excuses already, blah, 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 blah. And that's not, I mean, if you take a quote out of context, great, congratulations, you're good at social media now, but that wasn't really the case. Like they were consciously, and it's consistent with everything that we had heard coming from these guys during spring, which was, man, they're throwing so much at us. And it even got to the point where Jay said, this is the first time in a long time that the defense was adding packages during spring practice in order to compete with the offense, which one is not a great look for Brian Ferentz in absentia. But two really goes to the level of challenge that Lester was able to provide just in those 15 days of practice. So, yeah, they didn't show quite as much, but there was a clip. Tyler Tashman of the Register posted a clip of Iowa using some motion short side, like a jet sweep motion to the short side, and then immediately like turning it into a toss play to Caleb Johnson going the other direction. And a big part of why they did that was because there was a defender trailing. I think it was Wiegand that was coming on motion, and there was a defender trailing him, which you kind of have to because Elliot, like you said, Caden Wiegand is really fast. So all of a sudden, the defense is back on its heels and having to read and react even before the snap. And if all that does is create a half second of wait a second from the defense, a guy like Caleb Johnson, who's also really fast, can make use of that. Like that's a like half a second is essentially like a 5 yard cushion with the way these guys are sprinting. So that can be a game changing adjustment in and of itself. And so we did get to see some of that. And you know, how well is Iowa going to be able to incorporate all that? How well will I mean, we don't have to worry about Iowa's defense adjusting to it once the season starts, but how well will other teams' defenses be able to read and react to it? I don't think we're going to hear as many quotes from opposing defenders in 24 that they said, you know, over the last 5 years about how easy it is to prepare for Iowa. I don't think we're going to get a whole lot of that this year. And especially a guy like Lester. And I think it's actually going to be really, really good for Lester that he's coaching against Phil Parker day in and day out. And Jay Higgins, in his longer answer, spoke at length in terms of like the chess match that goes on and the way that these guys are not only you know, using reads to do their job, but the coaches are understanding what those reads are and making adjustments off of said reads. Like it's really fascinating stuff. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that improves Lester as a play caller, as you know, a in-game adjustment maker. I think it's going to make him a better coach. And so how quickly does that improvement make its way to the field? How easily does that translate to the players as opposed to, you know, coaches and X's and O's? You know, it's X's and O's are great, but it's really about the Rexes and Joes. And so are these guys going to turn it into production on the field? I think that we're going to see some of that, especially as the year progresses and as these guys get used to playing that offense against opposing defenses, the hostile defenses. But it's something to watch and something that's going to be pretty cool to see.
Yes. Now, the other thing that we need to talk about, we already hit on the addition of Cade Baroud as a transfer, but Adam, you wrote about the offensive line. You saw improvement today?
Yeah, I did. And a big part of it was just schematic because, again, the opposing defense can't just crash the line on 80-90% of the plays. And so, like Lester mentioned on Thursday, you know, if a linebacker is making the tackle, but he's not allowed, or not allowed, but he's making that tackle from his starting spot, congratulations, that's 4 yards instead of 1 yard. And if you're trying to string together third down conversions, and if you're trying to string together drives, you want those third and shorts. You want to, you know, not be behind schedule. And so just getting these guys the opportunity to succeed, essentially, like because it's pretty much impossible to block, you know, 6 on 9 or, you know, 5 on 8. So one, schematically, they're better off. Two, you really start to see that veteran leadership and veteran presence, you know, especially from guys like Tyler Ellsbury and Nick DeYoung, you know, guys who have bounced around the line and really learned roles in different spots. And so, I mean, let's remember there were two starters out today. It was mostly precautionary because, again, it's April, but this wasn't even the full strength version of the team, and they had veteran guys that they could plug in there into those spots just to be able to compete and like Logan Jones said, you didn't really notice all that much of a difference. Now, some a lot of the more productive rushing plays were to the edges and out to the boundary, and so you didn't really see that like 5 yard push, and you're really not going to see a whole lot of that when it's Aaron Graves and Jeremiah Pittman that you're trying to push 5 yards. Like, good luck with that. But you didn't see a whole lot of whiffs, especially from the first unit. Second unit, the guys who were, mostly redshirt freshmen had a few more of those, even going up against the second team. But this unit, at the very least, Mason Richmond, wasn't great, but he was making good blocks. Iowa was able to spring a few nice looking runs here or there, even though, defenders weren't allowed to tackle. There did look like a little bit of improvement. And Lester, in particular, on Thursday, had mentioned that pace was going to be a big part of that, that the Iowa, they're not going to go up tempo or anything like that. It's not going to be Texas Tech or anything, but they do want to operate that RPO offense, especially, get up to the line, hit the snap, blow the guys off the ball. They want that part to be done with pace. And so we started to see a little bit of that today. And as opposed to getting to the line, look around for 15 seconds, and then, run one of your two or three rush plays. So they, and Lester even mentioned that this is a little bit of an adjustment for them. So, again, it's the middle of April, and we'll see how these things look in September, but they're excited about that part. They are really optimistic about how this team can put together a rushing offense with pace, with strength, with tempo. And it also helps to have great blocking tight ends too. Let's not forget that part. So there is absolutely optimism on the offensive line. They didn't look great today. And so don't go telling social media that I said Iowa's offensive line is going to win the Joe Moore Award or anything like that, but they looked capable. They look like a bunch of guys who have been on a football field for 3 years at least. I didn't really see any all Big Ten caliber play. Nobody really jumped out like that. But again, two starters out, middle of April, brand new coordinator, brand new offense. They were never going to look like a finished product. That was never going to be realistic. But they look like they had been out there practicing, competing, improving, and it didn't look like a disaster in the making. And I mean, even on some good offensive lines over the years, like Ross, I think you can attest to, there have been some rough springs, especially going up against these defenses over the years. So, I mean, they look like they were ready to hold their own against a really, really good, talented, experienced Iowa defense. And yeah, I mean, you want to see them do better. Nobody's calling it perfect, but it was an improvement. I think you got to call it an improvement.
There were still some sacks, right?
Oh yeah.
What would be
Oh
sacks.
yeah.
Yeah. Plenty of
And
those.
Deacon Hill doesn't help that on that front either. Like, one of the big things that I really wanted to see out of him today was a sign that the game had started to slow down for him. And you still saw him start to waffle around in the pocket a little bit too much. There was one like strip sack, which is amazing when you're not allowed to touch the QB. But Rex Roth came untouched on a blitz on that third and goal from the three and just swatted the ball out of his hands. But again, that thing or that play is only so much on Deacon Hill. And I saw the coaches talking to, I think it was Caleb Johnson, but I don't quote me on that one. But one of the running backs got a little chat after that one. So it was a missed block, but it's also a situation where, a different quarterback, a more athletic quarterback, maybe can make something happen on that. But I mean, it was just a straight shot for Rex Roth and a guy like that who would be starting on, I would wager, at least half of FBS teams at this point. Only so much you're going to be able to do about that.
Speaking of Rex Roth, well, the defense is still going to be one of the best in the
Stacked.
country. Like, that's over, done. Like, I almost don't even, like, with 8 of 11 starters back, a few of them sidelined. Jamari Harris didn't play today. He hasn't been super active throughout the spring. But You just know that they're going to be elite again, right? Of course, we have the questions about the defensive tackle depth, but that's almost nitpicky compared to what the issues are with the offense. It is nitpicky compared to what the issues are with the offense. And that second group of linebackers, man, I that was the one thing like that's new to me today that I felt like we could point out. Carson Shire had a pick six. Jackson Rexroth had a pick six, got his jersey ripped, which I have a picture of on Twitter. I can't remember who's, I think it was, I can't remember who said it. It might have been Nick Jackson. But once Jackson Rexroth ran over to the sideline, Nick Jackson was like, "That's got to be holding, right?" As his jersey's hanging. But I really like those two. I really like Jaden Harrell. I think it was Shire who got the majority of the reps at the Leo spot with Kyler Fisher out today. I like them all. I think Iowa's linebacking core is going to just continue to be awesome for years to come. This 24 class coming in is really good. That's really the only new thing for me today. I didn't want to see Cohen. I did want to see more. I want to see more of Zach Lutmer right now. But of course, Cohen was sidelined. Jamari was sidelined. And there was another player that I mentioned that I'm now for. Kyler Fisher was sidelined, but I want to see Cohen out there. I'm really excited to see what he does, assuming he's at the cache. He's one of those guys that, from what we saw towards the end of the last season, he's just like too good to keep him off the field. You got to find a way to get him out there, whether it's just special teams or whatever. And he's made a commitment to staying at Iowa, no matter who's in that secondary. He said that when Quinn was still making his decision. So, I really don't have anything else to say about the defense. I really like those second string linebackers, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah, one more name to throw into the mix at linebacker because what they needed was another productive name. But Jade Montgomery looked pretty good too, in the limited snaps that he got. So just an embarrassment of riches at that position.
So we've been saying it, maybe, and it's unfortunate to say it because there are so many good players, but maybe that's where we see some of that scholarship issues be alleviated because some of those guys deserve to be on a football field somewhere.
Yeah, if that's what they want out of this season, I mean, if I were one of those guys and I'm like, all right, I've waited my turn behind a Nick Jackson or a Jay Higgins or a Kyler Fisher or a Sebastian Castro, I've learned from the best. My turn, my time. Oh, it's another year of that. So what are your priorities at that point? Are you committed to Iowa City? Are you committed to the program? Or is it a, I've only got this limited window to play college ball. At some point, I'm here to do more than be a cheerleader with this scholarship. I want to make something out of this and get the most out of myself that I can. Yeah, and I don't think there would be anybody in Iowa City who's going to say, oh, what the heck? And I'm not going to mention anybody by name because I don't want to push anybody out the door. But I mean, what the heck? LB3, like you're not a real hockey. Like nobody would even think that at this point. It's a like, go do what you got to do. So it's absolutely a an interesting situation for that defense in particular. And what's the balance between talent and depth and making sure these guys are going after their own goals too. So we'll see how that shakes out. I would imagine there's going to be some recognizable names hitting the portal. And if that's the case, hey, Godspeed, good luck. Like go, maybe don't go to somebody that's going to play Iowa for the fan's sake. But other than that, and if that is their best opportunity too, all right, great, go do it,
So, moving on to special teams here. I don't necessarily think there's a ton to take away. Rhys Dakin was punting into the wind for a good portion of today. Drew Stevens missed like a 56-yard field goal attempt, something wild that would have been difficult to make without wind. I mean, those were the two, I guess you could consider them negatives, but Rhys also put one inside the five from, I think, the opposite side of the field, which was a really nice punt. He had the wind to his back. Ty Nissen, solid, good to have on the roster. Rhys is going to be the punter this year. And then Trip Woody was Drew's backup. Another kind of the same situation. Good enough. Good to be the backup. But I mean, I trust LeVar Woods fully to get that situation figured out. And we didn't really see much of returns or who was doing Gunner because they pretty much caught the punt and called it good. But the sentiment regarding Reese is that he's not Torrey Taylor right now, and he's not, and we shouldn't expect him to be. And to hold him to that standard is probably not fair to a guy who was 26 out there punting as the best in college football to now a 19-year-old. So that's pretty much where I'm at with special teams. I think we'll learn and see more in the fall. How about you, Ross?
I was just going to say, we're like 50 plus minutes into this podcast and we haven't talked about punting yet, which I think is probably an extreme disservice to our listeners. So
the
I apologize
sin. For the crime against humanity.
I apologize for that. But no, I mean, I think you're absolutely right about Reese Dakin, and it's, you know, he's such in a different circumstance than Torrey Taylor. It's just Torrey Taylor was a 26-year-old. He came to Iowa late. He had 4 years of development here. Like by last year, he was exceptional, you know, arguably the best punter Iowa has ever had. And that includes Reggie Roby, who was an incredible punter in his own right. So to go, you know, anything is going to be a step down from what Torrey Taylor was last year. So, you know, you just cannot hold Dakin to that standard. It would be extremely unfair, but you know, it sounds like he has a lot of ability in his own right. And so, no, I mean, I think Iowa fans should not prepare for, you know, a repeat of Torrey Taylor's season last year. I mean, for one thing, I mean, God help us if we see that many punts this fall. I mean, nobody wants to see that. I mean, it was great that Torrey got to break that Michigan State dude's record that had been around for decades and whatever. But, I mean, he got that opportunity because the offense gave him like 10 chances a game to punt the ball, unfortunately. So don't want to see that this year, but I think there's a lot of potential with Dakin, obviously, and excited to see how that develops. And what about Drew Stevens? You know, he LeVar Woods had some great comments about him and his development on Thursday. He, you know, had a really tough end of the season last year, got benched in that Nebraska game. And then didn't get to take any more attempt any kicks the next two games because Iowa unfortunately got shut out in both games. And sorry to bring up those ugly memories. But what did he look like today? What did you see from Stevens?
Well, I mean, one sort of going back to the punting real quick. The whole punting is winning and Torrey Taylor MVP thing, and it's cool to see the fans really embrace guys like that. And Torrey Taylor is one of the most likable guys that's ever put on a Hawkeye uniform. But there was a huge element of gallows humor to all that too. It was the absurdity of it all informed it as much as anything, because if you're not having fun with the punters, then you're watching some dreadful offense. And so, yeah, you really hope that nothing like that happens under Lester, especially this season too, or else I think the fun is going to sort of get sucked out of Iowa City when there's isn't a punching bag like Brian Ferentz around anymore. So yeah, I don't think it's going to get as cute if the offense is punting, you know, 8 to 10 times a game again this season, especially because again, Dakin is not Torrey Taylor. And, you know, he was punting into a stiff wind, and the coaches have mentioned that that's something that he's going to have to get used to. And, you know, he mentioned that himself, but I was watching him and taking notes, and he was just sitting 35 or 40 net yards kicking into that wind, which on some level is pretty good because again, Elliot, like you mentioned, when he wasn't punting into that coffin corner kick was a like, wow moment. I think he's going to be good pretty soon. Is it going to be an all-time great like Torrey Taylor? Like that's not even a fair standard to hold anybody to, regardless of what city in Australia they're from. In terms of Stevens, he looked noticeably better than Trip Woody today. Woody missed a few chippies. And another media member said that that was a little bit consistent with how he'd been kicking in spring practice too. So Stevens, at the very least, like Elliott, yeah, he did miss that 56-yarder, and it looked a little bit short, a little bit wide. He did hit one from about that distance later in the practice as we were heading down to go to interviews. So the leg is still there, and the confidence from the coaches is still there. So yeah, I think he looked improved. Now, when you're kicking in practice for this long and this many opportunities, you are going to miss a couple, and we did see him miss a couple, but by and large, he looked noticeably better than Woody, had a stronger leg than Woody. And I would say any sort of questions about who's the, K1 on this team, I think there is not going to be an or on this depth chart anytime soon.
There you have it. Those are our takeaways from the open practice that was held today in Iowa City at Kinnick Stadium, or yesterday if you're listening here on Sunday. Either way, we appreciate you tuning in to this episode of HawkCast. Wherever you're listening, make sure you hit that subscribe button. If you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave that rate and review. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment, drop a like, let us know what you're thinking about Iowa heading into summer post spring practice. What are they going to do with all these scholarships? Tell us, because somebody's got the solution out there. We're just trying to figure it out. Again, we appreciate you tuning into this episode. Before you go, also, if you're not a premium subscriber yet, make sure you do that today at iowithoutrivals.com/subscribe. You get all the insider information from us on football and basketball recruiting, as well as basketball and football right there. And that's pretty much it. Appreciate you tuning in. Thanks so much. I am Elliot Clough at Elliot Clough on Twitter, joined by Ross Binder, managing editor, and Adam Jacoby, publisher at iowa.rivals.com. For now, we will see you next time.